You know, I got my start in sports working for Lee Steinberg, the most notable sports agent in the world, not because I was a great lawyer or a sports agent, because I understood technology and venture capital. And Lee in the early 2000s saw the future of sports in technology and venture capital. And you could tell over the last 26 years, that's exactly what's happened. So I decided to bring the two smartest people I know about technology and venture capital when it comes to sports. I have the amazing Mark Lohr, the CEO, chairman, founder of Wonder. They just closed around for $650 million, has a $9 billion valuation. Nobody understands venture capital and technology better in the world of sports. He's also the owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves, so he knows where to spend his money as well in those very valuable 32 assets that exist with the NBA franchise. Let's get a big round of applause and bring on stage Mark Lohr.
There he is.
Thank you, brother. And I thought when it comes to venture capital and technology, I had to bring my brain coach. I don't know if you guys know who Jim Quick is. Wrote the number one bestseller, New York Times bestseller, millions of copies of Limitless. This thing changed my life. Jim has worked with the biggest names in sports from Tom Brady down. Will Smith, he is an amazing scholar, the best brain coach in the world, number one bestseller. Let's hear it for Jim Quick. All right, boys, thank you so much for joining me. As I mentioned, Lee Steinberg was a visionary literally 25 years ago when he hired me because my technology and venture capital background. I'm going to start with you, Mark. How important is venture capital and technology in sports today?
How important is venture capital?
And technology.
I've always been a big fan of raising as much money as you possibly can to go bigger and bigger and bigger. So we're fortunate in this country that we have access to venture capital. And people I know are worried about dilution and how much capital should you raise. Anytime I raise money and dilute the company, I'm thinking, can I increase the value by more than I just got diluted by the money I raised? And the answer is for 25 years, 30 years doing this has always been yes. So I just don't care about dilution. Raise as much money as you can and build as big of a company as you possibly can. That's it.
And Jim, you know, we've seen in sports, especially sports ownership, the valuations of these companies like Wonder, $9 billion. We saw the Seahawks sell unbelievable, about $9.4 billion, I think, as well. It hasn't been that long when I was helping Jeff Morad buy the San Diego Padres for $245 million, and they thought that was ridiculous. How is it relative as far as mindset of the limitations that we put on our own belief system or our own self-image to allow guys like Mark to think in the billions when it used to be a couple million that excited a guy like that?
Yeah, I believe mindset is so very important. I don't think we rise to the level of our goals and aspirations as much as we fall to our level of self-image, like the image that we have about ourselves. I think all behavior is belief-driven. You know, even at a practical day-to-day level, your brain is like this incredible supercomputer and your self-talk is the program that will run. So if you tell yourself, I'm not good at remembering people's names, you won't remember the name of the next person you meet because you program your computer not to. So I feel like mindset is foundational for all kinds of success.
And Mark, the understanding how I have this equation of results, it's what I think about turns into my perception. My perception turns into meaning, and I have the power to give meaning to even shitty things that happen. I remember when I lost over $100 million, I had to seriously work on giving it a meaning that's going to promote me, protect me, love and perfect me somehow when I was feeling very punished, by the way. And 20 years later, I've made more money, helped more people, and had more fun than I ever imagined. But if you told me that day, I wasn't going to believe you. Both of you guys have suffered losses, setbacks, and failures. In this equation of thought, perception, meaning, and intention, without worrying about the results, how have you been able, when you get kicked in the face, to give it the right meaning to continue to be a billionaire?
A lot of things running through my head, but I think having a mission, something that motivates you beyond money, gives you a reason to wake up in the morning. And so you remind yourself that whatever you're doing, building, whether it be a company, something for your community, that there's a real purpose behind it. And if in the end of the day, it doesn't work out the way you wanted, you could always hold that you were doing it for the right reason. Losing a ton of money and then realizing you had no mission and no purpose, and there was, even if you won, you still weren't winning, that would be a lot more painful. But I think you can sleep at night knowing that I went for it, I gave it everything I had, I took the risk, and I did it for the right reasons. And every time you do anything in life, there's always a probability it doesn't work out the way you want it.
Yeah, most likely it won't work out the way you want. I always say it's going to work out better. It's just a lapse of time before you figure out that it is going to be better. And having that perspective of all great entrepreneurs that I'm blessed to be around, coach, advise, they all have that same mindset. Jim, your book changed my life. I had to hire you as my brain coach once I read it because I couldn't believe how I was missing out on so much of life just because I didn't know how the brain worked. I didn't understand how my memory worked. And I meet a lot of people. But one of the things that really helped me with that's relative to technology is make better choices. We've made choices, big choices. We make them fast. How do you help people be more aware of what choices to make so they don't feel stuck and they move, they don't feel overwhelmed, they start prioritizing things? Those are ways that you changed my life.
So there's a quote in Limitless from a French philosopher that says, and I have this on my wall, that life is the letter C between the letters B and D, where B stands for birth and D stands for death, and life C is choice. That our lives are the sum total of all the choices we made up to this point. And I believe these difficult times, Kate, they could define you. These difficult times can diminish you. These difficult times can distract you. Or these difficult times, they could develop you, right? We decide whether something's going to make us bitter or better. Yeah, I had a traumatic brain injury when I was 5 years old. The teacher called me the boy with the broken brain. That became my mindset back then. And, I do believe that, change is scary if you're making change, right? Growth could be hard, but nothing is as scary and hard as being stuck somewhere that you don't belong, And I feel like our mind is our most valuable asset, and the faster you learn, the faster you can earn. Because when you know more, you could do more. When you know better, you can make better choices. And it's not even about time management, because that's the only thing that's equal. Not everybody has equal net worth or income or contacts or education, but we all have 24 hours in a day. And so it's not even about time management. It's about mind management. It's about priority management. And I always say that the most important thing is to keep the most important thing the most important thing. A lot of people are burnt out because they think they're doing too much. It's been my experience working with clients that some people are burnt out not because they're doing too much, but because they're doing too little of the things that are lighting us up, that make our souls kind of come alive. Even purpose, which I really value purpose getting you through hard times, because I think adversity can be an advantage. I don't know one strong person that had an easy life, right? With struggle comes strength, with challenge comes change. And I think that's a mindset.
It's a great mindset. One of the other things we're blessed to be around are great athletes. People ask me the common denominator. We've done thousands of episodes of the playbook. Both of you have blessed me by being on the playbook as well. But the common denominator that I see is a desire that you must be what you can be. And that holds true today, although things are moving quicker. There's so much uncertainty, as there always is, because that's all there is uncertainty. But having four kids of my own, you both have kids as well. It's a difficult challenge trying to advise our own children about the uncertainty of the future. And I think they have a bigger and better challenge ahead of them because things move so fast. I was curious, we're all involved with Junior Achievement, which is entrepreneurs 15 to 25 years old, 100 million alumni in Junior Achievement, pouring into the community of kids, working with young athletes. What guidance basic guidance can we give the next generation, whether it be our own kids or other people's kids, of where they should pay attention or give intention? What should they be doing today?
I mean, it just reminded me of something I've told my kids since they were very little. I have two daughters, 26 and 23 years old, so they're both out of college now. But when they were very little, I said, just remember these three things. Anything you do, you give it your all. You try your very best. You believe in yourself and have fun. Those are the three things.
I love it. How about you, Jim, as a father?
So I turned 53 this month. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. You know, I thought I would brain hack the heck out of these kids, but I find that as a new parent, I'm learning so much more than I could ever teach. You know, and I think these are things that we lose sometimes over time. Curiosity, they're so present, they're so playful, they are willing to make mistakes, they don't care what other people think. And I think sometimes in society, through marketing or media or the fear of looking bad, that we kind of mitigate our potential because of that. And if, you know, like, if you fuel your life by the opinions and expectations of others, positive or negative, I think we're gonna run out of gas. You know, and I always say people are so concerned. I'm like, one of my favorite quotes is a Teddy Roosevelt quote, you know, the man in the arena, you know, and that it's not the critic's opinion that counts. It's the person that's in the arena doing the work with sweat, dust, blood on their face. Because, and I always think, I tell my kids, don't take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice from. You know, I think that those kind of like ideas are imprinted on them and, you know, will change the direction of their life.
Yeah, it's interesting. People have this I'll be happy when attachment to outcomes. They have FOMO, the fear of missing out, especially today, FOPO, right? Fear of other people's opinion. And to be able to have the joy of missing out with all the different options, opportunities. I tell people all the time, they're like, there's too many choices. I'm like, you're blessed. That's called abundance. When you have tons of options, you got to take joy in that. And then, like you said, take joy in other people's opinion, that person is not in the position I want to be in. Why would I care about his opinion? It's none of my business. And then I have the capability, because of social media, to find people like you two. You're accessible. We can ask you questions. We could be here. And never before in history, we couldn't just go up to Steve Wynn when we were young and say, hey, man, tell me about your relationship with money and learn that lesson. And today, that's available for everyone. One of the other things we were talking about, you're so successful, both of you, financially, for the sake of helping others and having fun. The same way we try to put that to the future generation. Having fun's really important. But one of the aspects when you make a lot of money, and I've done it twice, first time not the right way, luckily I've learned, is humility. And I remember going up to my mom's house when I lost everything. One thing, when you lose all your money, especially if it's like $100 million like I lost, you wait till the very last second to tell your wife you have screwed up everything. But you make sure you wait till the very, very, very last second to tell your mom, right? Because she's not there. So I didn't go tell her, and this came as a huge surprise, that I lost everything, but I really screwed up because I lost her house. My name was on her title. She got evicted. So when I told my mom that I lost her house and went bankrupt, her first saying to me was, are you okay? Do you need money? I told her, Mom, did you hear me? Why is God punishing me? She, of course, turns it into a lesson, tells me God doesn't punish. He protects, promotes, loves, and perfects you. You got to work this out. She then reminded me of my favorite line, which was, remember, you're either humble or you're about to be. And to this day, I have to check myself with all the successes and failures to bring in the humility that I have faith in something bigger than me that loves me more than my mom. For you, how important is the humility in your success, not the amplification of it, as we see a lot of people do on social media?
Yeah, that's a great one. I mean, being a startup founder most of my life, it's just is incredibly humbling. I mean, doesn't matter how successful you are, it's always really, really hard to build a business, to convince people to come work for the business, to convince people to put capital into the business. And so it's a humbling experience every day. And so you just, I like it that way though. I wouldn't want it any other way.
Mark, I know this not to embarrass you, but there's a difference between scarcity, and I learned this the second time, and frugality. You and I are more frugal. We don't waste money on lavish, you know, 16 houses around the world, planes, all these different things. How important is that distinction as you start to make a lot of money between frugality and abundance or scarcity?
Yeah, I put an incredible amount of, I just value simplicity. I put a premium on simplicity. I think houses, extra houses cause complexity, extra cars, boats, planes, art, you name it. So I like that I have one home and one car, and it's very simple in that way, and don't have a family office. I don't need to make more money from the money I made. I really enjoy experiences, so I put money into having experiences, and I put all my time and effort into my startup because it has a mission to make great food much more accessible in the world. Motivates me. I'm building something. I'm employing people. I'm making shareholders money. That makes me happy. So things you realize don't make you happy. I know a lot of people with a lot of things that are miserable. And then when they're miserable, they buy other things. And it just adds a weight in your life. And so I've seen that. And so I don't want to do that.
Yeah, Jim, I talk about filling a God-sized hole with everything but God. Yeah. And planes, cars, and houses don't. You're going to say?
No, I think sometimes when we subtract things in our life, we multiply. I mean, you think about the things in your life, the people that maybe shouldn't have the influence or the projects you shouldn't be putting energy and focus and money into. You know, when you subtract, it's proof that sometimes we do multiply. You know, I know there are a number of people who are entrepreneurs here. You have to feed your business until it feeds you back, right? It takes sacrifice and investment. And, you know, it's really hard because knowledge, I think if knowledge is power, learning is your superpower, that we can adapt, that's human beings, that's our superpower, our ability to adapt with change. We have cognitive flexibility. And when we're rigid, then you have like a Blockbuster that doesn't change, or a Kodak that developed digital photography but is now extinct because they're not rigid. And just like how you want your body to be pliable and fast and flexible, you want your mind to be flexible to be able to deal with today's challenges with AI and the advancements of technology. But I think it's so important to have, you have your, everyone here has a to-do list. I really recommend having a not-to-do list, like a non-negotiable, things that you just won't do. And I think that frees up more of your time. You say no to good, so you say yes to great.
I love that. A couple weeks ago, I was with Nick Saban. And I love winning coaches and understanding their mindset, and they empower kids and they're great sources of helping in a variety of ways to be a great leader. And more importantly, building leaders. Nick explained to me early in his career, he would do, say, think, feel, and believe anything to win a championship. Whatever it cost, he wanted to win a championship. And until he shifted his mindset, his brain into, I will do whatever it takes to build champions because champions win championships and it's much easier. You both have built huge teams. You work with the biggest companies in the world, the biggest actors, athletes in the world. You have some of the biggest companies in the world as well. And we know our success really has come from the people that work with us. And Wonder is so successful because of not only the community of people that work with you, but the people that will buy from you and sell for you for life because you provide value. What is your philosophy about winning and building champions?
I think it comes down to the difference between short-term mentality and long-term mentality when you're managing people. There's no question in the very short term to get the most out of people, you use the stick. But that's very short term. If you really want to build an enduring culture over many decades or generations, if you want people to follow you from company to company throughout your life, you have to have a long-term mentality. And I think it's leading with empathy and kindness. It's treating people the way you'd want to be treated. It's building them up, motivating them, empowering them, And many times that means letting them proceed in a direction that you disagree with, because it's empowering. And it's in the short term, yeah, maybe you can get them to go in a different direction that maybe you believe is right. But people that feel empowered and they feel trusted and they feel like you're being fair and kind will give you more over a longer period of time. They'll do whatever it takes to make sure they don't let you down, let the company down. They become, I say, missionary versus mercenary. They're part, feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, but that only happens when they feel that they're respected and empowered and you're treating them well. So I've always tried to lead in that way.
And you have so well, which is why so many of your companies do so well, and the people you've surrounded yourself with represent that as well. Jim, you work with the biggest companies in the world exactly for this purpose.
We do the mental fitness training at places like Facebook, Nike, Google, SpaceX. You know, what I find is that leaders create other leaders, right? It's not for the followers, it's the leadership. And people support what they help create, what they help create in terms of the movement. You know, for our movement, we want to build better, brighter brains, you know, because I feel like going back to humility and leadership, you know, if knowledge is power, then learning is your superpower. And I think one of the ways to learn faster is have humility, because your mind is like a parachute. It only works when it's open, right? And so, and I think humility opens that up. And I have a core belief that I can learn something from every single person that I meet, no matter what age or stage they are, because they had a different life than I did. But that creates, that humility allows me to have curiosity, right? To always be learning, not just from books, but from mentors, from people also as well. I think also in companies working with leadership, it's not always the bottleneck that's limiting them is not always technology or capital or even talent. Usually the bottleneck is the cognitive capacity of leadership, their ability to stay focused, their ability to, like AI could create a lot of information, but human beings have to determine what's important, what this information means, what to do with all this information also as well. But, you know, I think, you know, this is my 35th year of teaching and coaching. As a coach, I want people to be better than I am, right? And just like if you're a parent, you want your children to exceed, you know, what you've demonstrated. And I think it's what you do so naturally is you're a builder of humans. And I think even in a world of AI, I think it's going to make us more human. That's my optimistic view, that if AI is going to scale and amplify, it's only going to scale and amplify what you bring to it, your human intelligence, right? Your wisdom, your creativity, your purpose, and so much more. So I feel like we can't compute and process faster than the machine. So how are we going to be relevant at work and on our careers? We have to be more human. Our emotional quotient, our understanding, we have to find purpose and meaning. We have to be able to adapt, learn, unlearn, relearn. And we have to form social networks and leadership. Those are the kind of qualities that I think will make us more human and also more, not only successful, but more fulfilled.
So interesting you say that, because people ask me, what skill sets would you teach not only your own kids, but advise me to help our kids? And one is reading. I know that's right up your alley, buddy, but I believe that we need to practice and develop the understanding between real and fake and imagination. And reading is the best way to develop our imagination. Two is old school for me. If I could get my own kids to cold call 150 calls a day, especially if it was knocking on doors in person, I guarantee any kid that does that for a year will be extremely successful in the future. That skill set's going to be a unique skill set, even probably more valuable than dunking a basketball. A lot cheaper to hire those guys too. And then, of course, practice AI. We need to keep practicing because it changes so fast. We could talk about AI today, but I didn't want to, because by the time we get home, it'll change. The advice that we gave. One of the questions that a lot of people ask, of course, of people like us is, what advice would you give to your 18-year-old self? I don't like that question. One of my favorite lessons I learned from Lee Steinberg was to be kind to your future self. So I like to ask people like you two, What advice would you give to your future self? I'll go. Go ahead, Jim, if you're ready.
So I was asked recently, who are the couple people you want to make proud in your life? And, you know, some people think about parents or kids or their spouse. Or for me, since being labeled when I was young as learning disabled, put in special ed, you know, my goal is to make that 9-year-old version of myself proud. And also, God willing, if I become 90 years old, I want to make that person proud also. So I have this book coming out called Limitless Daily, and it comes out in September, but it's all about, there's one entry, it's like 366 entries to win the day, right? Based on your mind. And I have this exercise where I think about the future self. Like, how many of you ever watched a television show or a movie and you know what the main character needs to do? Like, you know what they need to say, you know what they need to realize, you know what they need to do, what they have to acknowledge, and you're screaming at the screen. Imagine this. Imagine there's been a camera crew following you your whole life. What's the audience like screaming at you to do? And I feel like sometimes when we procrastinate, we put the burden on our future self and we don't have to deal with it today. And I think that's a challenge. But I like asking, like, what would my future self want me to do in this moment, right? Because I think there's a version of yourself a year from now that's patiently waiting, you know? And the goal is we show up every single day until we're introduced.
I love it. Mark, any lessons for your future self?
For me, it always comes down to your personal core values. I think everybody should spend time and think about what are their personal core values. What are the things that trump everything else? It's guides how you live your life. And I think an incredible amount of happiness comes from when you know you're true to yourself and you're making decisions based on your core values. I would tell my future self to make sure to never lose sight of those values. And sometimes you don't know what your core values are. You think there's something until you're faced with a tough decision where following a core value causes you some loss or pain, loss of money, loss of ego. There's other losses that come. But knowing what the values are and sticking to them is sort of the North Star and guiding light, I think, for one's life. Like, that's the conclusion I've come to.
So you guys have helped so many people. And I always say the secret sauce in life, the fastest way to succeed is to know your who. Who sits in a situation to help, but also who you can help. And both of you are in that situation where you help millions of people. But a lot of times we don't talk about how and who can help you. So I thought we'd take the last minute here. What's the biggest win for you in the next 12 months and how can we help you?
biggest win, because I'm obsessed with my startup Wonder and all I think about is getting this company public in the next 12 months. I would have to say that, but there are other things that are equally as important, but that's just the thing on my mind.
I love that. Make sure you follow Wonder, see what they're doing. Hugely successful company, will continue to grow exponentially. I'm allowed to say that. More importantly, Jim, how about you?
Well, I would say what passion is, passion and purpose are, those words are used interchangeably. For me, passion is what lights you up, and you can have a lot of passions. Purpose for me is how you use your passion to light somebody else up. So learning is a passion of mine. Teaching people how to learn better is my purpose because it lights them up. And so if you want to be supportive of me, it's just make a decision today that your future self would thank you for. Like, you know, for Limitless, I think the equation is you learn to earn to return. We've sold millions of copies of Limitless and we donated all the proceeds to charity. We built schools in Ghana, Guatemala, Kenya, Alzheimer's. We funded Alzheimer's research for women in memory of my grandmother who I lost when I was 7. And I just feel like, you know, kindness goes a long way. Like, everybody's fighting a battle nobody knows about, you know, and I feel like, you know, being kind to ourselves also is very important. Because self-compassion, giving yourself some grace, like looking at the mirror and loving that reflection back that's been through so much, but is still standing. So I would say what would be supportive of me is make a change today that makes the world better and brighter, because it's where the world needs it when it's often so dim.
That's here for two of the greatest entrepreneurs that I know, the incredible Mark Lohr and Jim Quick. We all can live limitless lives.
Thank
I
you, David.
Thank Fanatics Fest for giving us an opportunity. It's one thing to see the great heroes, but to give an opportunity to impact people and provide this content from the stage, it shows what Michael and the rest of the crew here truly value. So thank you guys for joining us.